Woi woi, woi woi, woi woi. Danny Dan cop on the radio again. Yo, if you want no smoke free weed, go board yourself. You need to go plant a seed. Go board yourself, make your knowledge increase. Go board yourself, go board yourself, go board yourself. You want no smoke.
Hey everyone, it is episode 102 of Grow Bud Yourself, our spooky Halloween themed episode here for you. We've got a great one. We're going to be doing some grow tips. It's going to be some macabre grow tips from Dr. Dankenstein. I'm going to have some answers for grow questions, a segment on also some spooky cannabis-related subjects, and more for you guys, all brought to you by Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Excelsior Extracts, and our newest advertiser, Prime Superior Inoculant. Use the code PS420 for 15% off. And if you want to learn more about their product, check out episode 91, where we spoke with Dr. Paul Rushton and Todd Young of Prime Superior. But without further ado, let's take a break and come back. Episode 102 is coming at you. All right, welcome back. And as always, thank you to DJ Jacques and Winstrong for the incredible Grow Bud Yourself theme song. It does get stuck in the head. It's an earworm, and I love it. You know, Grow Bud Yourself, you guys. Hope you enjoy it. And if you do, check them out on social media as well. DJ Jacques does some awesome stuff on Twitch. If you're in Northern California, he's got some pretty amazing live DJ performances with accompanied by Winstrong and a bunch of other reggae artists and hip-hop artists. So follow him. Tell him Grow Bud Yourself sent you. And here we are with a spooky, scary Halloween episode. How you feeling, Mike?
Ooh, I'm feeling good, man. Yeah, and speaking of Jacques and Winstrong, they've been with us pretty much since the beginning, which is awesome. And definitely,
I mean, they did the Free Weed song, which was awesome. And then, and now they do the Grow Bud Yourself song. So over a decade of earworms.
Earworms. Yeah, for lack of a better phrase there.
And not our mercy.
We're fresh off of a fun live event that we did last week. Weekend. That's
right. Yeah, we did a grow class here in Brooklyn at New York Hydroponics. We had a nice crowd show up for that. I think it's important when you're learning to be able to see the grow tent, see the equipment, see the nutrients, see plants growing inside a tent and realize, hey, I know exactly where I can fit that in my house. And so we had a nice crowd and we're going to do it again. We're actually going to do it November 19th. We'll be back at New York Hydroponics on Union Street in Brooklyn doing another show. So people can check out our social media to find out more about that in-person grow workshops at the Hydro Store. So if you're interested and you're in the area, please stop by. We've got free gift bags. You get a free copy of my book signed. We do 2-hour grow class. Then there's Q&A at the end. I think even Andrew, the owner of the shop, will feed you some burgers. He's got a award-winning burger truck right outside the venue. And it's a great venue too. I mean, he's got all different plants growing. It's very welcoming and awesome. And it's coincidentally just a block or two away from one of my early grow sites here in New York. So I wish it was there then. You know, I had to travel a long way to get my equipment back then. It would have been nice to just walk around the corner and pick up supplies. But the neighborhood's changed a lot. It's the Gowanus neighborhood in Brooklyn. It's exciting to be doing live grow classes. I mean, that was the plan before the pandemic. And then now hopefully we'll be doing more of that as things open up more and more. So excited to be doing that and happy to be partnered with them and hoping, you know, you guys can join us at some point for a grow class.
Yeah, come on out. Learn how to grow some weed, definitely. As Dan mentioned, this is the Halloween episode, and we've got some spooky, scary, fun Halloween stuff coming up later in the show. But actually, before we get to that, just out of curiosity, what's the scariest pot related thing that's happened to you? You mentioned that you used to grow in the area where we did that grow class, and obviously there was a lot more risk associated with growing cannabis back when you were doing it as opposed to right now. But does anything stand out in your mind as a particularly frightening cannabis experience for you?
Yeah. And it's actually related to that space. I moved into that apartment from a loft apartment that was elsewhere in Brooklyn. And the reason I had to make that move one day, you know, I was in the loft. I had a grow room sort of hidden in this building in a live work type of space. And some firemen came to the door, knocked on the door and said, "Hey, we need to inspect your apartment." Oof. Or your loft. You know, and I said, "Well, you know, sorry, but I can't let you in right now. I've got a dark room. I'm you know, developing some photographs in there right now."
That was smart. That was a good,
yeah, thought. I mean, I had to on the cuff kind of come up with a plan here,
yeah,
to keep them from just trudging right through my apartment and with, you know, live cannabis plants and lighting and everything in there. So I put them off, but I could only put them off for a day. And I didn't realize that, you know, they don't need a warrant. They're there to check if you're, you know, you've got sprinklers in every room. They're doing a safety check. They don't need a warrant for that. So of course, in the, you know, the rest of the night was spent taking down the grow and moving the plants. I had to rent a U-Haul basically and fill in the middle of the night, you know, put bags over the plants and bring them out to this U-Haul, park it in the neighborhood, just hoping people didn't smell it. And of course the firemen show up the next day and there's no dark room. There's just what's left of a grow room. And so they're joking around with them, each other. "Oh yeah, some dark room here. Yeah. Some photographer." "Yeah. The dark room looks more like a light room," you know, they're saying all these jokes to each other. And, you know, and I took that personally, to quote Michael Jordan. I felt like, you know, the situation had been compromised and I had to leave. And so, you know, basically moved to this other apartment and set up the lights and set up the plants. And I was just lucky to be able to have this other place to go to and bring my grow to. And basically never went back to that loft apartment again. I mean, broke the lease and skated. And that was very, very frustrating. I mean, I'm joking about it now, but at the time, it was one of the most frightening experiences I've ever had.
I bet.
When it comes to basically, I mean, you just want to go to bed. You know, by the time it's like 3 or 4 in the morning and you're not even halfway done, you know, because it wasn't like a grow tent. It was like a pretty significant sized operation. So taking it all down, getting rid of the equipment, moving the plants, taking down the lights, all of it just took all night and really took everything I had to accomplish. So that's really the scariest experience I had. And it's one of those things I wouldn't wish upon anyone because, it was just so frustrating and not even knowing that, hey, these guys can just come in at any time and inspect your apartment. And find your plants. And then, I mean, the firemen were cool about it, but who knows who they're telling? Who knows, you know, if they got a cop buddy or whoever else that
right,
they told
right.
Could then come back and rob me or arrest me, whatever it might be. I felt that it was compromised. And I think I was right to move out of there. But man, that was scary. Real, true fear. Yeah.
The crop was for the most part salvaged.
Yeah. Okay, I was able to salvage the crop. Luckily, it wasn't too far along at that point. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't even really in the flowering stage. I was able to basically take these vegging plants. I mean, they were a little worse for wear from having bags put over them and bouncing around in the back of a U-Haul. but they survived and I got them to where they needed to go. I mean, I was living crop to crop back then too. So it would have been even more devastating if I had have lost those plants altogether. But I was prepared to lose them if I had to, if I couldn't find an alternative place, but I lucked out and found that apartment, not far from the grow shop. And so that's pretty much the scariest thing for me, aside from a few other, you know, close calls here and yeah. there. That one, that was the closest one where the clock was ticking and I had to do all of this on my own. You know, I can't say that there wasn't some serious emotion.
I imagine,
at the,
yeah.
at the right. time. And I can laugh and joke about it now, but at the time it was truly devastating.
I would imagine. I guess for me, I'll skip any kind of near arrest because we've all had, if you've consumed cannabis at all during prohibition, you've come, you know, you've either been arrested or come extremely close to it. Just very quickly for me, I was in London studying abroad there, got there and needed a weed connection, but didn't have one. There was this really strange rumor just floating around the school there that if you went to Piccadilly Circus and you found this neon sign, and I can't remember exactly what it said, but there'd be a neon sign. And catty-cornered from that, there would be a dark staircase. And if you walked up that staircase, eventually you would run into a person who would sell you hash. This is all we had to go on. So I took a group of friends with me, and we went to Piccadilly Circus desperate for something. And none of them, we found the neon sign. We found the catty-cornered stairwell, but nobody would go up there. So I did it. Walked up one flight, nothing. Walked up a second flight and found probably the most terrifying looking gentleman I've ever seen in my life sitting on a plastic bucket. And he just stared at me and I just stared at him. And I said, could I have five? And he handed me five hash sticks and I paid for them and got moderately high on really terrible hash. But
yeah, definitely. Man, they call that soap bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Our friends in the UK,
yeah,
they call that soap bar. Yeah, I mean, these younger folks out here will never understand the struggle.
They don't know
of what it took back then to, you know, to score something, to grow something. I mean,
the idea that you could just walk into a store now and buy like a cart
off a menu.
Off a menu, yeah. But we'd like to hear your scary cannabis stories. So go ahead and either email those to us, info@growbudyourself.com, or share them on patreon.com/Danny Danko or anywhere else that you could find us online. Before we move in more to our other Halloween cannabis content, maybe we should just very briefly touch on some news.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, it is our great hope that this is not our last show before the midterm elections come. That is November 8th for those who are paying attention. But just in case, or anyway, people should know, we wanted to just touch on, I think, the states that are hanging in the balance. There are five states that have recreational cannabis initiatives on the ballot this November. So that's exciting. Those states are Arkansas, Maryland, Missouri, North Dakota, and South Dakota. And all of those states, with the exception of Maryland, include a retail component to the recreational, to the adult use ballot initiatives. So only Maryland would not include that retail aspect. And to me, the most interesting, of course, is South Dakota. People who listen to this show probably remember this is a sticking point with Dan and I, because South Dakota already legalized recreational cannabis, but the governor there refused to allow the will of the voters to win the day and challenged that with a lawsuit, won that lawsuit, and had the ballot initiative overturned. So South Dakota gets a second bite at the apple here. Hopefully they could do it again. But those are the five states, Dan. What do you think? Interesting states: North Dakota, South Dakota, Missouri, Maryland, and Arkansas.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's important that we get this passed. I think if all five of those states go, we're going to be close to 30 states at that point. Or definitely in the high 20s, which is amazing. And I'd love to see, and those are states that, you know, you never would have really thought of doing that sort of thing 5 or 10 years ago. So it is huge. There's other states. I mean, look at Pennsylvania. You know, you've got Fetterman and Dr. Oz, a clear distinction there between the two of them as far as where the cannabis policy of that state is going to go. I think pretty much everywhere, you know, the more progressive candidates are going to be more likely to be on our side with this. That's not always the case, obviously, but primarily and these days with everything becoming so polarized and people really getting further and further apart from each other in their way of thinking politically. So, yeah, I mean, I do think it's important that get out there and vote and change these laws and really get to a point where they can change the federal law and actually deschedule cannabis and treat it the way it should be treated, like tomatoes or peppers or onions.
Absolutely. And, you know, just assuming that these five states come through November 8th, it would leave only Idaho, Nebraska, and Kansas as states with absolutely no cannabis laws on the books. So the world is obviously changing, and it's very exciting. Get out there and vote, as Dan mentioned. That's a little look at what's going on in the world of weed. We don't have an interview this week, but we're going to take a little break and then come back with some Halloween-related cannabis content for you.
Do you want to take your cultivation program to the next level and grow higher quality, naturally healthier plants? Our new sponsor, Prime Superior, can get you there with simple, safe, and effective products. Whether you're starting with seeds, clones, or your plants are already established, Prime Superior has a product for you. And best of all, you don't have to change anything in your grow program. Just add Prime Superior. Do you want the best biological for cannabis growing? Prime Superior's proprietary strain of Bovaria bassania increases terpenes, cannabinoids, and yield. Inoculate early with Prime Superior, and you will see faster germination and larger root mass, which will help you propel your nutrient uptake. Faster growth and more photosynthesis means higher yields and more terpenes and cannabinoids. Plus, Prime Superior has the world's first biological cloning honey to help improve your cloning success. Now's the time to try Prime Superior. Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use the code PS420 for 15% off their entire order at primesuperior.com. So don't hesitate, inoculate, and visit primesuperior.com to learn more.
Okay, here we are back. Episode 102. This is exciting stuff. We got some marijuana macabre to talk about here. And Dan, some marijuana or cannabis has gone through a lot of spooky and disturbing periods since it's first been demonized in this country back in the 1930s. So what we thought we would do here is just go over some of the scarier aspects of cannabis, and then you, Danny Danko, can kind of debunk these things to stop the fear that goes along with cannabis. So starting off, I think probably maybe the most prevalent and long-lasting aspect that has attached itself to cannabis is the gateway theory. So that's using cannabis can lead to using hard drugs like heroin. The gateway theory has somehow managed to endure to this day. And in fact, pot is still classified alongside heroin in the CSA, the Controlled Substances Act. Why is this theory BS?
Wow. We can do a few episodes on this. I'll try to keep it brief. But basically what happens is if you demonize cannabis and then, you know, lump it together with all these other substances that are far more harmful. What happens is kids try cannabis and then they realize, wait a second, they've been lying about this thing. It's not nearly as, you know, harmful or anything that they said it was. I actually enjoyed it. And then, therefore, they're thinking, well, maybe they're lying about these other things. Maybe I should, you know, try some cocaine or some heroin or fentanyl or whatever it might be. Maybe they're lying about those things. And it's the lie about cannabis that drives people to those other things, you know. And I think if you make that distinction like they do in Holland, in Amsterdam, for instance, between what they call soft drugs and hard drugs. And soft drugs are tolerated. Hard drugs are less tolerated, although they do have injection sites and things like that as well, because they're very practical about these things. But they have coffee shops and they have a tolerance for cannabis. Meanwhile, the young people in Holland, they think cannabis is kind of like corny because there isn't that stigma placed upon it. It's what the tourists come and do. And they're not drawn towards harder drugs because they haven't been lied to about cannabis. And I think it's important, that distinction. And I think, you know, you could very easily call alcohol or nicotine a gateway drug as easily as you could call cannabis a gateway drug. I think if you made, I make this argument, but if you made cigarettes illegal tomorrow, first of all, people would be killing each other over, you know, cartons and truckloads and packs of cigarettes. Just like they do over other illicit commodities that are prohibited, but that still have a demand that needs a supply. And I think cannabis in many ways is a gateway back from those things. I've met thousands of people all around the world who have told me that they've used cannabis to get off of hard drugs, to get out of an addiction to alcohol, to wean themselves off of opiates and things like that. So to me, the reality is that cannabis is a gateway home, a gateway back, and certainly not a gateway to those things. Now, do people who become addicted to hard drugs sometimes start with cannabis? Yeah, of course, because it's easier to find, it's more prevalent, and it's just one of those things. I mean, everyone who does those things also drank milk before they tried those things. Is milk a gateway drug? You could make that argument. They all did it first and then moved on to something else. Mm. But most of the people I know who are real cannabis lifers and people who have sort of either dedicated their life to this cause or just are connoisseurs, aficionados, their eyes are open to the fact that, you know, there's a lot of other poisons out there and cannabis doesn't belong lumped together with those as having no medicinal value. But when you lump them together that way, then it makes people start to question whether you're lying about those other things. And I know people who've gone down that path for exactly those reasons. And I think it's a shame. And I think we really need to understand that, like, you really can't lump cannabis or classify it in a way as a Schedule I drug with no medicinal use and not expect that people are going to call you on that when they realize that you're lying. And then they're going to wonder, what else are they lying about?
So you're lying about, yeah.
Right. And so in that way, sure, it's a gateway. But again, if you made nicotine illegal tomorrow, you could call nicotine a gateway drug. If you could do the same with practically anything, because one thing leads to another. If you're lying to me about this, maybe you're lying to me about that. But if you tell the truth to people about cannabis, they're far less likely to think, oh, well, you know, I should go and try these other things. And some of the reasons people move on from cannabis is lack of cannabis, right? So there's a drought or they can't find any. And then they're like, well, you know, I do want to catch a buzz of some kind. So, you know, maybe I'll try this other thing. And that's where the mistake is made. But if they have access to cannabis, they don't ever even think of that. They, you know, they're happy with what they've got. And that's how I've always felt about it. I mean, I love cannabis. I don't want to get involved in any of those other things. And I think that I could spend the whole rest of my life just smoking weed and be fine with that. I'm really not looking for something stronger. I'm actually afraid of those things. I don't even barely take aspirin. You know? People think of me as like the big drug guy, but I'm scared of drugs. Right. I like plants and fungus. I trust what the earth provides. I don't necessarily want some chemically derived product like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's bullshit. And I'm calling them out on it.
That's the gateway theory there. A little bit of correlation versus causation at play there as well. Let's move on to the next one. And this is the low IQ. So smoking weed lowers your IQ. And the more you smoke, the stupider you get. And this is despite some of the smartest people on Earth being confirmed cannabis consumers like Carl Sagan or Lester Grinspoon or, of course, you and I. So this one,
I was just going to mention Carl Sagan. Some of the smartest people I know are cannabis users.
Right.
And some of the smartest people I know aren't cannabis users, but had they used it or if they used it, it would not, certainly not in any iota, make them any dumber than they are or affect their intelligence in any way. And yet another myth. I think, you know, our friend Bean likes to say the whole thing about cannabis makes you lazy or stupid. It's like, there are lazy people and stupid people who smoke cannabis and maybe use it as an excuse to be the way that they are. But that doesn't mean it makes you that way. That just means that there's some people who do it and are that way.
Mm, right.
Again, it's causation, and you know, it's a fraudulent argument, and clearly, you know, we know many examples of people who defy that stigma and that false narrative.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to violence. So in 1933, a 21-year-old man named Victor Licata murdered his entire family with an axe. Henry Anslinger was quick to tie those grisly deaths to cannabis, linking pot with the horrific violence. And even though Licata was later diagnosed with mental illness and cannabis had absolutely nothing to do with those murders, the crimes helped criminalize pot. And violence has been linked to the drug for decades. So cannabis and violence, we seem to see the exact opposite at play, but that had such an important part of criminalizing the drug to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, that's one I can almost not even have an argument for or against. On the one hand, they say it makes you lazy. On the other hand, it makes you violent. On the one hand, they say it makes you dumb. On the other hand, now you're going to kill your whole family. it's so stupid as to be laughed at. You know, it's arguing against that is actually giving that some kind of validity in some case. And that stigma, I mean, certainly there are people who smoke cannabis and commit violent acts. I'm not stupid enough to believe that that's not a thing, but it's so rare that you can certainly attribute that to mental illnesses or schizophrenia or all kinds of other factors. And if anything, the reason they fear marijuana isn't because it makes people violent, but it makes them think, and it makes them question authority and makes them question the way things are and how they could be. And that's really the violence has been done upon us as cannabis consumers. That's where the violence has happened. The violence is people rushing into our homes against our will, you know, shooting our pets, tearing us away from our families, taking away college scholarships, throwing people into jail, killing them for possessing cannabis. And there's thousands of instances where the violence is perpetrated against us as cannabis consumers and as responsible users of a healing flower, and not some mindless dum-dums that smoke weed and kill our families. I mean, that's just absolutely preposterous argument. And I'm personally horrified by that. By that stigma and by the fact that there's anyone out there in the world who believes it. And I honestly think that anyone who truly spouts those type of arguments doesn't believe it themselves. They're paid to say something like that. in one form or another, because either they're you know, addiction specialists that want to fill their clinics with potheads because there's more of us than there are of people who use the harder drugs, and that therefore we're just widgets in a system that they need beds to fill, and so they're profiting one way or another, or they're from, you know, other segments of the population that profits, like prison guard unions, police departments, pharmaceutical drug executives, all people I wouldn't necessarily suggest have our health and best interests in mind when they make that argument. I think really when they make that argument, they're trying to dehumanize us and keep that stigma alive so that they can keep incarcerating us and using us as widgets in a system that that basically just grinds people into money.
Like Kevin Sabat, perhaps.
Agreed. Who blocked me on social media because he can't even handle
good
can't even handle the arguments.
The irony that his organization is Smart Approaches just really gets me every time. Okay, so we're running a little long here. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to run down a list of some of the side effects that prohibitionists claim marijuana causes. You pick maybe your favorite of these and go ahead and give them hell here. So memory loss, mental illness, schizophrenia, laziness, lung cancer, suicidal tendencies, increased traffic fatalities from driving stoned, and of course, addiction.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all of those, as far as I know, have been debunked. There have been no cases of anyone killed by cannabis. I think a bale of it would have to fall on you from from a very high place in order to actually damage you. If they had any evidence of any of that, we'd already know about
it. Oh my goodness, yeah.
And they would flout it night and day, and we'd be seeing that. Now, what they do is they take, you know, lab rats and give them, you know, 5,000 times the amount of smoke and THC than anyone could ever consume, and then base their tests on that because that's how they get their grants and money. But the reality is an unbiased test of cannabis will show that it is one of the safest and most therapeutic substances on earth. And, you know, you got me on my soapbox. Yeah, you got under my skin here, like, you know, like you should on Halloween, you know, you want the creepy crawly feeling. But yeah, I mean, it's all a bunch of BS. And I think anyone who's spouting any of that should be ashamed of themselves and should really look into their motivation, because if the motivation is to help people, cannabis helps people. It helps them get off of hard drugs. It helps them get off of alcohol. It helps them with post-traumatic stress. Not everyone, okay? I'm not saying it's for everyone. And if you have schizophrenia and those type of tendencies in your family or in yourself, it's not for you. Cannabis is mind-altering. It does change perception. And people who need to be in reality at all times should probably stay away. But that's a very small segment of the population compared to the amount of people that it helps. And if you can prove to me that it's more harmful than sugar, nicotine, or alcohol, I'll eat my shoe.
Well, as much as we all would like to see that, I don't think it's going to happen. And as we've said 100 times, I think, on this show, people with mental illness often use marijuana because they're self-medicating. You know, they may not have been properly diagnosed. They don't have the medication they need. And they self-medicate with alcohol, with cannabis, with other substances. But that doesn't mean that those substances are causing the mental illness. That was a little Halloween edition of Macabre Marijuana Stigmas, and I hope you all enjoyed that. Happy Halloween to everybody who listens to this show.
Absolutely. Happy Halloween, you guys. Let's get ready for Thanksgiving and Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you might celebrate. And yeah.
Yeah. So we'll take a little break. We'll come back and we'll we'll get into the cultivation portion of this show.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more Grow Bud Yourself. If you're a grower, or you're thinking about starting your first crop, then you need to know about Sweet Leaf plant nutrients. Sweet Leaf has an incredible line of organic fertilizers and, of course, their legacy line that includes organic and some synthetic fertilizers. Check them out at sweetleaf.com. That's SUITELEAF.com. The code DANKO15 gets you 15% off everything at Sweet Leaf. That's 15% off their signature line of nutrients as well as essentials like complete indoor hydroponic grow tent kits and grow lights, plus awesome apparel, backpacks, and much more. If you join our Patreon, you'll get access to additional codes worth 20% and even 25% off. Patreon supporters also receive free Sweet Leaf nutrients just for signing up. Sweet Leaf provides all the tools necessary for the modern gardener. Check them out at sweetleaf.com and remember the code DANKO15. All right, welcome back, Halloweenies. Hope all is well with you guys. We got a truncated show for you guys. We've done some real long ones in the last few, so this one's a little bit shorter, but as always, we are going to have a grow tip. We don't have a strain this time, no strain of the fortnight, but we do have a grow tip in Q&A, so Mike, what are we going to do for the grow tip here?
Well, you know, it is Halloween, and by the time you're listening to this, it's Halloween, and we decided to do something a little spooky this time around, and we have our own Dr. Dankenstein here, not Frankenstein, Dankenstein, and he's going to take us through some of the macabre marijuana grow tips here for us. So starting things off, Dr. Dankenstein, and I guess that makes me Dankenstein's monster, but Dr. Dankenstein, how would you go about bringing plants back from the dead?
All right. Well, typically, this is called re-vegging, sort of rejuvenating a plant. Basically, after you've harvested a plant and you think that, you know, that's a genetic that you want to hold on to, a particularly special cultivar that you want to preserve, typically, once you've harvested a plant, that plant is dead. But if you harvest it and leave some of the fan leaves, some of the branches and infrastructure, stems, leaves, whatever, on the plant, and then take that, you know, somewhat decimated, almost dead plant, put it under vegging lights for 20 hours or so per day of light, it will hopefully bounce back and start growing new shoots and new leaves, and you can basically bring it back from the dead. Now, the reason for this is sometimes you don't necessarily know what you've got until you flowered it. And then once you flowered it, you realize, oh man, this is incredible. And I want to hang on to this. I want to make a mother plant. I just want to grow it again because you know, it's that one in a million phenotype or whatever you might've found that strikes you in a certain way as being very special. And yet once you've harvested it, dried it and smoked it, it's gone forever. So what you would do is harvest the plant, but leave some fan leaves, leave some of the younger shoots and things on the lower branches, things that you're not going to be harvesting anyway. Leave some of that there on the plant. Put the plant back into a veg cycle instead of a flowering cycle. If it's indoors, change the light cycle. If it's outdoors, bring it inside and put it under lights for at least 18 hours per day. You're still going to have to, you know, keep it watered and under light, and hopefully what you'll see is new shoots will come out and develop, and from those new shoots you can either create a mother plant from that plant, although it has been stressed by going through that re-vegging process, or once the shoots have grown long enough, take cuttings and use those cuttings as your mother plant, you know, root the clones, And then those clones will then become your mother plants that you would use to cut clones from. That's if you want to keep that plant forever. If you want, just want to re-veg it and reflower it just to get some more flowers out of it, that's a possibility as well. But if you want to re-veg it and get mother plant out of it, that's the way you'll have longevity for that cultivar. So yeah, that's how you would bring a somewhat almost dead plant back to life.
All right, very good. And Dr. Dankenstein, for some of us, pests are a real problem. And we just want the worst for them. So how would you go about unleashing a Texas Chainsaw Massacre style incident on these pests that are destroying our plants?
Yeah, so this is a fun one because you can use these beneficial predators and parasites and nematodes. There's an enemy for every vegetarian bug or anything that you've got there. I mean, there's the obvious ones like ladybugs. And praying mantises that are big and you can see. And then there's ones that are practically microscopic that will attack larvae. They will attack tiny little spider mites, thrips, whatever the problem that you've got. And it's quite satisfying. I talk about this all the time, but if you've got access to like a microscope or a loupe and you unleash these carnivores against these vegetarians that are destroying your plants and sucking the life out of them, you see that up close and it can be quite satisfying. It's suddenly they have an enemy and now they're not concerned so much with sucking your plants dry, and they're more concerned with saving their own lives and they run for the hills. And to see it up close is incredible. I mean, people think ladybugs are cute, but if you see a picture of a ladybug up close, you'll see that they are just ravenous beasts. And when they get a hold of a spider mite, a nice big juicy spider mite, they will grab it, rip its head off, suck all the juice right out of it, and throw it aside and then move on to another one. And it really puts fear into these fearless bugs that have attacked your plants. And it's just amazing. I know recently a picture went viral of an ant. An up close, very, you know, obviously macro shot of an ant's face. And Google this if you haven't seen it. If you have, you're probably having nightmares right now, because when you see what an ant looks like up close and you realize, man, if these things were our size, they would rule the earth, rule the planet. I mean, they're just, it's scary what they look like, the jaws and the teeth and, you know, and they're able to, I mean, they're like superheroes. I mean, ants can carry 10 times their weight. They can, you know, just rip through things. And those ones that carry the chunks of leaves. And I mean, they have this whole hierarchy and system that they live in. But yeah, as far as beneficial, and I shouldn't just say beneficial insects, because I mean, there's so many different things out there that some of them aren't necessarily classified even as insects. But they're predators. So for anything that you find, and even green lacewing larvae also fall into this category. You want to find something that kills the adults and also destroys their eggs and larvae as well. And if you can, there's parasitic wasps, there's nematodes. There's a bunch of things out there. And praying mantises are fun too, because they're actually big enough that you can actually really see what they're doing, and they're not going to end up like dried inside your bud the way some of these other things might. And this is why you keep spiders around too. I mean, if they're not poisonous spiders, it's good to have spiders around. They kill flies. There's also, like, you know, beetles that are out there that do this sort of thing. They're basically bugs that are assassins, killers, and voracious appetites. Ladybugs, you know, you got to be careful about. They, once they've eaten their fill, they want to migrate and get away. Also, they're super nasty if you accidentally step on ladybugs. They emit a pretty foul odor. They can like all congregate on the hood of your light, or like your intake fans and outtake fans and stuff. So you got to be careful and judicious when you do this. They're great for outdoors, just to kill an infestation quick and then move on. But there's lots of these parasitic insects, including wasps. And I don't know if you want to unleash wasps inside your house, but lots of different beneficial insects, some so tiny you can barely see them. You order them through the mail, you release them, and you let them kill at will with extreme prejudice.
All right, very nice. Okay, so moving on. Some mad scientists out there, they enjoy maybe grafting multiple heads on a sheep, like a three-headed sheep. But you, the mad scientist Dr. Dankenstein, how would you go about creating multiple strains on one magnificent specimen?
This is a good one. It's not really something I've ever personally done, just because I really don't have a need for it. It feels kind of like almost like a novelty. I have seen plants that are grafted. Most of the fruit plants that we eat are grafted plants. So, you know, apple trees are typically grafted. They're cuttings that are grafted onto existing trunks of trees. So that's how you make sure that you're getting the right kind of apples instead of just crab apples, which if you just plant apple seeds out of an apple, 99.9% of the plants that you're going to get are going to be crab apples. You can make cider out of them or something, but they're not edible. They're way too bitter and not tasty to eat. But if you want those sweet, fancy varieties, they're all grafted. And it's the case with a lot of fruits that we eat, that they are grafted, particularly the ones that like apples and such. As far as cannabis goes, you can graft cannabis. You need the proper tools, scalpels, razor blade, grafting or plumber's tape, is very helpful. If you have plastic bags that can seal, those extra large Ziploc bags, the quart size, work pretty good for this. Gardening wire, because you want to secure the graft, to the stalk that you're grafting it to. And a spray bottle to keep everything nice and humid and moist there as well. I have seen where people have taken, grafting to another level where they have basically four or five different strains on one plant. The only way this is really beneficial is as a mother plant. If you're just going to grow from a grafted plant, that's pretty silly because you're not going to get much of a yield. But if you want to have, for instance, you have a plant count of six plants and one of those plants is your mother plant, but you want to be able to take five different types of cuttings off your mother plant, then you would graft different branches from other mother plants onto a single mother plant. Again, it's a bit of a novelty, but it's something you can do. There's detailed instructions online. All you got to do is Google cannabis grafting, but it is sort of a Dr. Frankenstein kind of thing where you're taking one cultivar or one variety. I'm trying to move past using the word strains because, technically we're not really talking about strains. I mean, I wrote a whole book of strains, but we evolve over time, and grafting could evolve over time as well to end up being a way that, we can preserve genetics all on one plant. Interesting stuff, more of a curiosity than it is super beneficial, but the important thing is just creating the right environment when you're grafting. It's like cloning. Things have to be warm and the humidity levels have to be high for it to succeed, but it can be done. And if you'd like to go Dr. Frankenstein on it, Dankenstein, you can do it. It's probably an interesting, fun hobby. And like I said, if you want to grow multiple varieties on one stalk or cultivars on one stalk or one plant, grafting is the way.
All right, very good. Let's do a couple more here of these Dr. Dankenstein ones. On All Hallows' Eve, some sickos get their jollies dishing out beatings on unsuspecting passers-by. How would Dr. Dankenstein channel this aggression to benefit his garden?
Yeah. Beating up your plants, beating people, bad. beating plants can be good, and I learned this years ago from my buddy Easy Gene. He would have a hockey stick or some kind of like a pole. And basically he'd go in the room anytime his plants were vegging and just sort of run the stick across the top of the plants. And I, you know, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, what are you doing? Why, you know, cause right afterwards you'd see all the tops bent over, like they were struggling and suffering. And then, what's interesting is an hour or two later, you go back in the room and they're not bent over anymore. And actually they're stronger at that spot where he kind of bent them or broke them. Now you got to be careful and you got to be fairly gentle. You don't want to break them. But you want to bend them and you want to kind of beat them up a little bit, right at the top. So, you know, a hockey stick works good. Any kind of long pole that you can use across the canopy, you just sort of do it right on the new growth. You don't want to do this lower on the plant because you'll have thicker stalks there that can break. But that fresh new shoots that are just coming off the top at the very top of your canopy are very pliable. And if you do this and make a regular habit out of it, you never have to even use a trellis or any kind of device to support your plants because they're just stronger. The stalks are stronger. They can withstand wind and they can hold the weight of the buds. And I think you get bigger buds ultimately because thicker stalks just allow for more, more movement, more nutrient reaching flowers. And so I highly recommend it.
All right. Very good. And let's do one more here for Dr. Dankenstein. So in old roadside attractions that have long been shut down, you might find certain body parts floating in jars of formaldehyde. What would Dr. Dankenstein keep important parts of plants that he may want to grow out one day?
Yes, you're talking about tissue culture.
Mm.
Sounds grosser than it is. The word tissue, the word culture, it sounds gross and creepy. But ultimately, it's just micro cloning. So it's just taking clones, suspending those clones in agar, and they're tiny. I mean, you can take just the tiniest little piece of meristem, suspend it in agar. Conditions have to be very sterile. This is important for tissue culture. But once you have those lab-like sterile conditions, you can have that plant suspended in agar indefinitely. And you can even put it into deep freeze where it's just preserved for when you need it. And you can take it out of deep freeze and grow it out. Now, for a while, tissue culture was kind of a novelty. Again, in cannabis, it's kind of a thing that comes from orchid growing and other plant propagation, but now it's happening in cannabis. I've seen plants grown to full fruition, flowering plants that were grown from tissue culture instead of regular cloning, which is traditionally what we've used for many years. So yeah, you see the jar, you see the agar, looks like a you know, weird gel inside of a jar, and then there's that tiny little piece of stem from a cannabis plant in there, and roots are induced from that, and basically different parts of the plant can produce different things. So the root part produces roots, and then the green sort of leafy part produces the plant above. So it's an interesting way, a great way to preserve genetics for the long term and keep things around that you're not necessarily going to grow in the next year or two, but you definitely want to preserve and keep around so you can grow down the road. So rather than keeping a mother plant alive and all the things that can possibly go wrong with having a plant alive for 2 years, you can suspend a piece of a plant in agar under those very sterile conditions and grow from tissue culture. Which is also kind of a weird Dr. Frankenstein-y way to do things, but it works. And it's definitely part of the future too, because you can also imagine that it makes it much easier to ship genetics around to different places rather than full-sized cuttings. You can just send like a test tube. So Yeah, that's the thing with tissue culture. It's it sounds grosser than it is, but it's actually some very interesting technology that can be employed to preserve cannabis genetics, and that's a win-win. That's an overall great thing, and it would be nice to never lose another strain again. I mean, there's some strains that have just been lost to the wind and are gone forever. So if people are coming up with new ones and improving the gene pool, one of the ways to do that is to make sure you've got as many real different cultivars as possible with which to work with. Not just all the different polyhybrids that we work with, but original Landrace stuff, stuff that's been around for years. That another cool thing about tissue culture is plants that have been around that have suffered from all kinds of diseases or pests or whatever can basically be brought back to their original form and become disease-free when you bring them down to a cellular level and then bring them back from that. So a lot of interesting opportunities there. And, you know, the science continues to improve. And I think it's a wonderful way to, again, preserve genetics and maintain the gene pool that we have and improve upon it over the next years and decades.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you all for taking this stroll through the marijuana macabre with Dr. Tankenstein here in advance of Halloween. That was a
spooky, scary.
Yes, that was a fun little segment. But we now have arrived safely at the question and answer portion of this podcast. As always, if you have a question you would like Dan to answer on the show, you can get in touch with us. The email is info@growbudyourself.com. However, we are going to begin this week with a little Twitter question. So this comes to us from BC Bubble Man, and he writes, hey guys, can you go into the importance of cannabinoid and volatile organic compound expression via organic growing versus salt grown? I don't know what that means, but hopefully you do. So what do you think, Dan?
Yes, that's our friend BC Bubble Man. He's got a great show called Hash Church out there every Sunday. And it's a great question. And I think, you know, this is important for people to understand. Anytime you're concentrating something, you're concentrating all of that thing. So if your plants are organically grown or they're salt grown, meaning grown with chemicals that are derived in a lab, then those are the things that are also concentrated. So he's talking about the cannabinoids and volatile organic compounds. And when they're produced organically, they're, in my opinion, better than when they're produced using chemical salts formulated in a lab. Some people will say, how can the plant tell the difference? It's not the plant that can tell the difference. It's the person consuming the hash that can tell the difference. And I do think it's important to move away from salt growing and chemical nutrients. Here's a product that we're consuming, not just like an apple, which I prefer my apples be organic, but an apple you eat, cannabis flower, you light on fire and breathe in everything that's there. And with hash, you're concentrating that and still lighting it on fire and breathing it in. So I think always you want to err on the side of as clean as possible, organic or even beyond organic, veganic, but, you know, further away from salts and chemicals. And that doesn't even take into account the fact that then we're pouring those salts and chemicals out into the world, you know, down the drain or into our water supply, wherever it might be. So there's a environmental concern there. The only reason we grow using those synthetic salts and chemicals is it only started after World War II because they had all these materials left over, all these, you know, nitrates and fertilizers that they couldn't use for bombs. So they used to grow food crops, and you end up you know, on a large scale with something like the Salton Sea. And if you Google that, you'll see that all of the food production in California, the runoff from all of that basically ended up in a lake or a sea called the Salton Sea, which was a resort, you know, like a Coney Island kind of place with tons of, you know, houses and it was a place for people to go and visit. People live there. It was a resort, and now it's practically abandoned. I mean, the people who live there, you know, there's documentaries about them. It's a really strange place, an eerie place to live. Speaking of spooky, the Salton Sea is one of those places you could definitely film horror movies there if they're not already happening. So, but even aside from those, you know, if you don't care about the environment and that's not a concern, you should care about your lungs and your body. And I do think that, it is important for us to move away, from, you know, not only using salts and chemicals to grow, but also, pesticides, because whatever it is becoming concentrated. As Bubble Man said, these are volatile organic compounds and cannabinoids. You want them to be as clean as possible.
Very good. All right. Thank you, BC Bubble Man. Let's stay on Twitter here and go to Blockchain Beautification Committee, who writes, and we actually had the chance to answer this one during the grow class that we did last weekend. But the question here is, Dan, what are your thoughts on people doing 48 hours dark before harvest?
Yeah, this is one I hear about a lot. And I answered this in the class, but I don't think it's super duper important. I think it can be helpful because it does give the plant that extra time to rest. And I do suggest that when people do harvest, they don't harvest at the end of a light cycle or during a light cycle when your lights are on. I would say before the lights come on is the best time to harvest. And in that case, they've had 12 hours of darkness. Now, if you want to add another 36 hours of darkness, it certainly isn't going to affect the yield at all. And it may improve the terpene quality. And I do think that, you know, it's something worth looking into. I've never done side-by-side the same plant with 48 hours darkness before harvest and then with 12 hours darkness. I don't know that those 36 hours are going to have that much of an effect, but it'll save you, you know, 24 hours of light that you're spending on electricity. It's not going to make for a lesser yield, and it may improve the volatile organic compounds we were just talking about in Bubble Man's question. So I'm open to it. I don't think it's a make it or break it kind of thing where you're going to lose a cannabis cup because you harvested after, you know, 20 hours of darkness instead of 48. But I do think, you know, it could be worthwhile and certainly going to save you a tiny amount of money on electricity multiplied by in a large scale operation. That could be a lot. And I do think that, you know, the plant does its actual growing during that night cycle. During the day, it's taking in light, it's pulling in water and nutrients, but it's the dark time when the actual growth is occurring. So if you give it that extra, you know, that full 48 hours of darkness before harvest, it can be an improvement. So I used to tell people, I don't know, I think it's a myth, but now that I've kind of thought about it a little longer, I think it could be beneficial, but on a pretty small scale.
All right. Very good. You know, we've gone a little long here in the grow segment, but let's do one more. And this comes to us from Facebook. It comes from Daniel. And Daniel writes, what do you guys think is the optimal distance between tops? How much individual space does each top need to reach its optimal potential? What do you think, Dan?
That's an interesting question. It kind of is a strain specific question because some strains fill out bulkier than others and take up more space. So the tops would need a bit more space, particularly plants that are a bit more indica dominant. Plants with wider leaves and fatter buds are going to need a little more space. If you're in a situation where you're susceptible to powdery mildew, I think the more space between tops, the better, because when they're crowded together, there's more opportunity for mold and things like that to spread. But I would say, you know, if each individual top has enough space so that the fan leaves of that one top aren't necessarily touching the fan leaves of another top and crowding them, that's enough space. So I would say, 6 to 12 square inches per top, depending. And like I said, some of them are going to be thicker than others. Some of them are going to have bigger fan leaves and need a little more space. The important thing is that air is able to get between them and circulate, because it's the stagnant air where problems arise. So as long as air can get in between these individual tops, I think, you know, anywhere between half to a full square foot per top is ideal. I think, you know what, it also depends on the size of the plant too, because, short plants that aren't taking up a ton of space, that haven't vegged for 2 months or whatever, aren't going to need as much space for the plant or for their tops. And larger plants with more tops are going to need more space for each top as well.
All right. Excellent. So thank you to everybody who wrote in this week. We are going to take one more question over on Patreon, and that is we're going back to the basics to discuss some differences between growing sativa versus indica plants. But thank you to everyone who wrote in. If you have a question you would like answered on the show, get in touch with us. That email is info@growbudyourself.com. Join us over on patreon.com/DannyDanko for a bonus Grow Q&A. What do you say we take a brief break, come back, and then wrap this one up?
Let's do it. Hey guys, I want to tell you about one of our favorite sponsors, Excelsior Extracts. Outcast and TOH from Excelsior are incredible people, incredible growers, and they make an amazing product. Their THC-infused pain rub is made by patients for patients, and it provides powerful relief from pain. This product was developed to treat Outcast's chronic pain, and trust me, this is a super potent topical that really works. You can find out more about Excelsior on Instagram at Excelsior Extracts. That's EXCELSIOREXTRACTS. DM them there to learn more about their amazing pain rub. And don't forget to tell them that Grow Bud Yourself sent you. All right, welcome back, and we hope you enjoyed this special spooky episode 102 of Grow Bud Yourself. Definitely got on the soapbox there a little bit with the myths. I hate to hear some of that stuff. So that was a fun segment. Don't forget to get out there and vote if you can, and you're able, vote, you know, for your best interests. I want to thank DJ Jacques and Winstrong. I want to thank our sponsors, Sweet Leaf Nutrients. Use the code DANKO15 for 15% off at sweetleaf.com. SUITE, not SWEET. So sweet as in a suite at a hotel. Excelsior Extracts, the THC-infused pain relief rub. Check them out on Instagram. Follow them. Tell them Danny sent you from Grow Bud Yourself. And we wish all of the healing and health to our dear friend Elaine from Excelsior. Prime Superior Inoculant, an amazing product. I used it for the first time this year on my few outdoor plants that I had, and it was quite effective, I gotta say. The code there is PS420 for 15% off of Prime Superior Inoculant. You can learn more on episode 91. When we spoke to Dr. Paul Rushton and Todd Young of Prime Superior. Vapor.com, that's our affiliate, where you can purchase pretty much anything you need to consume cannabis using the code GROWBUDYOURSELF20 for 20% off. That's more than you're going to get from pretty much any promo code that they've got. I think most of them are 10 or 15%. So use that code if you're going to buy a vaporizer, rolling papers, anything from vapor.com. Want to thank all of you guys that support us on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/DannyDenko to join that community. YouTube listeners and followers, remember you can just, you know, bring our show up on your smart TV if you want and just have it playing in the background. Our friends at CryoCure are awesome. Hopefully they'll be back sometime soon with more information to share about freeze drying. Thank you guys for listening. Happy Halloween. Get out and vote. And we will be back with episode 103 in the very near future. Thanks for your support. And let's put this one in the books.